This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I've spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. Morning, Doug.
Hey, Gordon, how's it going?
I'm going well. I'm trying to decipher that jersey of yours. It looks like a cross between NASA and a Blue Bulls rugby jersey.
I prefer the NASA. I'm not a huge Blue Bulls fan.
What on earth is that jersey? It even says official on it.
It does say official. And now that I look at it, I don't know, Gordon. I just pulled it out of my cupboard. And, you know, it's in keeping with your shorts and slops, the vibe of late, I thought I'd be a little bit more casual.
You're my fashion icon, Doc. I mean, if you're going to drop the standards, then... there's only one way we can go on this one. But speaking of fashion icons, we've got today with us Wing Wing Ndlulwa, who is one of the most well-known personalities and creative in this country, certainly in the last two decades. And he, too, was a fashion icon until I saw his video this morning. Wing Wing, how are you doing?
I'm great. You got
it. Yeah, I know. Listen, I mean, I don't want to sort of out you here, but I mean, the dreads are gone, bro. I mean, the last time you and I were on a show together was No Lean on 3, and you had dreads everywhere, basically. Now they're gone. What's the story?
You, Gordon, that's about one marriage, three kids, 6 kilograms ago. 2 decades ago.
So you lost the dreads between marriages. Okay, that's fair enough. But yeah, thanks for joining us today.
Sorry, I'm mistaken. Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Only one marriage. I was single then.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, there you go. I mean, you know, I've unfortunately, you know, I'm not very good at collecting wives. I still got the same one I was issued when I was at school. So I have very poor opinion on how that whole thing works. We're going to chat a little bit later on about diversity and marketing workshops, which is the main thrust. But just give us a little bit on the background. I mean, how did you get into advertising? It's a different place now than it was, you know, 20, 25 years ago. You've been around for a long time. How did you get into it, and what was the appeal all the way back then?
As you say, it was a bit of a strange career choice for a black kid from Soweto in the 90s. So what happened is in high school, I think one of the subjects was business economics, and getting into the nitty-gritties of marketing, found out that in advertising there's a creative team and there's a person who kind of comes up with the words and the ideas and the whatever, the catchy stuff, smart stuff. And I thought that sounded like me. So that career stuck in my head, and getting into advertising was something completely different. It was daunting for everybody, especially somebody coming from the outside like me. So I kept my dream burning, you know, and I went off after school. I did a BCom through UNISA, ended up in banking, ended up working for one of the big banks in their sort of business banking kind of division as a credit administrator, Gordon. So, and then, but I, you know, I hadn't lost my love for advertising. I was the ultimate advertising groupie or fan. So I kind of knew who are the big agencies, who's doing what, who's won what. And so one day I was in Santa City having lunch with a friend of mine who just come back from what they call those things that rich kids take after school for varsity, gap year. So he come back from a gap year in Europe, this chap, and we're sitting having lunch at the old McRib in Santa. So this man comes up the escalators, and I recognize him immediately as Ngwengwe Nkomo, the kind of only black creative person I know of in the South African advertising industry. So this man walks past us and greets us with the warmest and friendliest smile. So I took that as a sign. So I saw where he was going and I followed him in, and I went and boldly introduced myself and told him what I wanted to do. So yeah, Nkwenks, what a nice man. he indulged me gave me whatever, 10 minutes of his time, and gave me his business card. So that was a Friday afternoon. The following Monday, first thing, I called him, and then he asked for my CV. And then, as fate would have it, my office where I worked with the bank happened to be across the road from the old Lindsay Smithers offices on Friedman Drive.
Yeah.
So it was just, I walked across the street, dropped off my CV at reception, and called him on his phone to tell him it's at reception. make sure you get it. So he got it, and within 2 weeks I got a phone call to come in for assessment. I took a day off from the bank basically made sure that wore a disguise so that my colleagues couldn't see me because they were across the road. You know, that's how it works. They couldn't see me walking into Lindsay Smithers. And I went in there. There must have been about 50 kids. So at the time, because it was 95, late 95, the advertising industry or a couple of agencies were starting to recruit black talent. So that day, there were about 50 kids from all different kind of art schools and whatever, you know, and kind of real artists. And there was me from the bank across the road. So they gave us some copy tests. A copy test is basically it's like an exam, or it's exactly what it is. A test. There's a couple of questions that assess different aspects of your creativity. You know. Mm. So 50 of us there. I went, did my thing, wrote it, and I think I aced it. And then when we're leaving, they asked if any of us would be interested in other kind of departments or other areas of advertising. And I thought, well, let me put my name down for this, you know, just to get a foot in. Anyway, got called back to come and interview for the other program, which was the non-creative program, media, strat, client service. So I went in for that interview, and within 15 minutes, I'd been accepted, and I was just chatting away for the next 45 minutes with my interviewer, and we became the biggest of friends. Anyway, so I started in advertising on January the 15th, 1996, as a trainee in the Iziko program at Lindsay Smithers FCB back then.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's how I started. And after about three months, they got round, Nkwenkwe and the creative guys, heads of creative, got round to evaluating the 50 creative copy tests and assignments we had done in the auditorium on that day. and they found one and which liked, and they're like, who's this guy? And they looked at the name, oh, he's here, he's on client service. Yeah. So they went and got me and put me in creative. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in 1996,
so that's how it started.
Yeah, I mean, Smithers in those days, I think, was universally referred to as the Ministry of Advertising, but be that as it may.
Yes, it was.
But yeah. just to cover off one thing here about this gap year. Gap year is not something that happens to rich kids, okay? Listen, I mean, fortunately, I don't, you know, sort of do any work with WPP. As you know, anybody over 30, you know, is on a gap year. And,
oh,
and
yeah.
Between WPP and Cyril Ramaphosa, 2020 is one big gap year for somebody of my age. So I'm also out there. But, you know.
Both me and you, Gordon.
Yeah, look, I don't have any dreads either. I also lost my dreads a while ago. Neither does the doc, for that matter. I think, and coming back, and not that we want to dwell too much on in the past, but I think, was Harry Herber part of the Smithers setup in those days? Because if he was, your introduction to media would have been spectacular.
Yes, we actually, I got to spend a lot of time with that, and at that time, yeah, media was, you know, I was still in-house, you know, in the agencies. So, it was just around the corner. So I did spend a lot of time with Harry Herber. I spent time learning about advertising research back then, the systems, RAMs, Telma, this, that. So, yeah.
So, I mean,
I learned a little bit.
Are you from Harry, you would have learned more than a little bit, and at least half of what you learned from Harry is publishable. I would have thought the other half probably best left alone. But, you know, so
yeah, definitely.
It's been a while. I mean, you've your industry service has been outstanding. You've worked on the XCurve Creative Circle. You've been chair of the Lurie's. I mean, if you think about the journey, have we made any progress? I mean, sometimes I look at where we are now and I think back to those days in the 90s, and I'd already been in the industry for 20 years then. You know, have we made any progress at all? And we're edging towards this issue of diversity. You know, you were lucky. I mean, Nkwenkwe is the most remarkable character, and Doc, we've got to get him on. Amongst other things, his achievements are extraordinary, but he was the chief scout of South Africa. I mean, you know, he really had a passion for young people and bringing the best out of young people. An amazing guy. But, you know.
He really opened doors for me and lots of others.
So the diversity, have we progressed 24 odd years, 25 years later? I mean, are we any better off? Do we have any better game plan at getting diversity off the ground in advertising?
Yeah, look, so if you look around at numbers or at faces, you would think, yeah, it looks a lot different than what it used to, let's say 25 years ago. You know, there's a lot more, well, black people in advertising and people of other races and also other genders, you know. I think if you look at it kind of critically, you know, and take a closer look of it, I've always maintained, you know, if you have, let's say 20 black interns, right, as opposed to one black account director and one black creative director or strategy director, what's more effective? You know what I mean? And for me, numbers don't always equal to influence or clout. Okay. So for me, yes, there's a lot more black people, a lot more women, and but for me, my question is, do those people have the clout, or are they empowered to make decisions? Are their voices heard in those boardrooms or in those meeting rooms? You know, so that's the question I would kind of throw right back into the thing. But then again, I see a lot more a lot more black, let's say, leaders within industry. When I say leaders, I mean leaders within departments and all of that. I do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I guess, you know, and again, you know, we've touched on this topic before with various people. It's about meaningful transformation. You know, it's about having the right people doing the right things, adding real value, as opposed to, you know, the old window dressing. And I think one of the topics that I'd really like to get into now, Wing Wing, is you've moved some of your thinking and your consulting work these days is around diversity in marketing. And I think one, and sadly, I don't think it's the end or the last time we're going to see a massive mistake like the latest, the clicks and Tresemme. I mean, Gordon, you know, looking at that, and we've all looked at it a few times, I actually genuinely thought it was so bad, I thought it was like sabotage. It could not ever have been a mistake. It was like one of the worst pieces of work that I think most of us have seen. And so, you know, it was just, I couldn't believe it. And I mean, I discussed it, as most of us did, with various people. You know, and I think diversity has been around for a bit, and I want to chat a little bit about that. But I mean, it's no more better time or more opportune time than now. So if you can just take us through, for our listeners out there, your diversity in marketing training, you're doing it. How do people get hold of it? What does it entail? And who's it aimed at? You know, is it just for agencies? Is it for clients as well? Or for the general public?
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
So first and foremost, you know, as a creative, I've always maintained that, I've always believed that no creative person deliberately sets out to offend, right? Okay, but let's park that. I do agree with you that the clicks thing was was unbelievable. You know, it was unbelievably bad, right? Okay, so, but I also want to say that having diversity in within your organization, marketing department, within your agency, I think it's because all of us, you know, we come from different backgrounds, you know, so we see things differently, right? Mm-hmm. And then you also add gender into the mix. You know, there's race, there's social kind of, you know, divisions, and then there's gender and all of that. So I'm not kind of immune from my own kind of biases. You know, I once got into trouble, you know, and had to got a rap over the knuckles from they're now called the ARP, Advertising Regulatory Board, for an ad I did, and you know, which I kind of was blind to the problem of GBV in the country, you know, we're just caught up, you know, in the concept and the execution and whatever, and missed this other thing completely, you know, so that happens, right? Yeah. But I think having people diverse backgrounds and who see things differently, you know, I think that helps helps everybody across the board. Just mitigate those blind spots and all of that. And look, Doc, I think we also have to admit that in this country, because of based on our history, there's a certain kind of group of people who've had no choice or had no option but to expose and be exposed to other cultures in order, I don't want to survive or whatever. Mm. I do not know. So I think it would be a miss for us not to tap into you know that group of people, that demographic. And another thing that's important is also to understand that brands in this most brands in this country serve a diversity of people, you know, across all excuse me, all kind of cultural and racial and whatever boundaries, and just from a consumer's perspective, it makes me happy and makes me feel good and have good feelings towards a brand when I see them recognizing me as a consumer. I'll give you an example. For a very long time, I don't know how many decades, black people in this country were always saying, yeah, how come BMW ignores us? The brand BMW ignores us when black people, yeah, I don't have the numbers, buy a ton of BMWs, you know? And the BMW's advertising for a very long time was very European in its look and feel and whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago, BMW brought out an ad.
For a
new edition. Basically that pays homage to the Kusheshe, the 325 IS from the 80s and early 90s. So that car, that Kusheshe, gained legendary status in the black townships of this country. That name Kusheshe was bestowed on it by the streets, township streets of South Africa, with no BMW support or whatever, you know. It just, and people took that thing and made it their own and whatever. So for me, finally, BMW has has paid homage, you know, to the culture, okay? Yeah, and say we recognize you and this is, you know, this car, you know, that used to call the Kusheshe. It's grown up now. It's this thing, this new limited edition thing and whatever. For me, that is pretty cool. And for me, just as a black South African, that's when I feel that, South African advertising is doing its job, you know, because you know what? I think advertising in South Africa is a relatively small industry, right?
Mm.
But its influence is huge, huge. It far kind of surpasses its contribution to the GDP in rands and cents. You know, advertising shapes how, you know, to an extent, how we look and feel about ourselves and how we feel about certain things in the world and in our lives, you know. So that's why, you know, we need to have diversity and representativity so that narrative or whatever is not lopsided.
Yeah, and for me, you know, coming at it from the limited perspective of media, which is my point of entry, you know, what saddens me is to see cultural diversity or, you know, whether it's gender or sexual orientation or race, whatever the case may be, but to see diversity, which is then not expressed in an equally diverse media application drives me around the twist. You know, so, I mean, I see ads which are clearly designed for with some diverse sensitivity in mind, but they just kind of average it out down the middle in terms of the media player. And I would really love to see, you know, in your workshop, in the fullness of time, you know, that the diversity that you, and I know you're working with Gillian Wrightford, and I know you've got a very strong team and a third colleague there whose name escapes me, but I'd love to see that being played out in the media application as well. There's no point in having a platform like LXFM or any one of the smaller stations without giving them a chance to participate in the narrative.
Yeah, and just, I mean...
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, obviously, Gordon, I share your view on that. And just, you know, just back to you, if you don't mind, Ringwin, just back to your earlier point about that diversity in marketing program. How do people get hold of it? If someone's listening out there, they're very keen to get involved. I think a lot of companies are either have got some program in play or they're thinking about it, or if they're not, geez, then I really am worried about them. So how do people get hold of the program? Is it online?
Okay. So Doug, the masterclass is presented in the form of three modules, right? My colleagues are Gillian Wrightford, who's a former agency leader and has been doing education and training with marketers and agencies for quite some time now. And then there's also Musidi Sirebzo, who's a seasoned marketing professional, former CMO of Vodacom, amongst many other big brands. And then there's me. And then the master classes take place over Zoom for now.
Okay.
Okay. Two mornings over Zoom. Two mornings on Zoom. There's three modules, and I'll just kind of give you just a brief overview of what they are. So, module one, the theme is understanding your consumer in the context of the South African consumer landscape and the role your brand plays. So that touches on understanding the nuances of consumer demographics, knowing brand purpose with the consumer lens, learn how to find deep transformative insights and et cetera. The second module is developing effective empathetic communication. So that reviews, firstly, reviewing advertising case studies, good and bad, with a diversity lens, understanding the tonality of the brand and the conversations that they're right to engage in. And such. And then module three is about crisis management and unpacking, understanding the principles of reputation management, discussing how to deal with fallout and emotional response, clarifying the role of the board and key stakeholders, and learning how to use the crisis management toolkit. But I think what's important is it's not a lecture as such. I think the few of us, as you know, with our experiences, decided to actually do something, because it's a huge glaring gap or issue, and it's a huge issue in our industry. So we want to have conversations and talk about our experiences, what we know, and for, you know, our audience, be it marketers or agency professionals or anybody else who's interested, to kind of, you know, talk about their experiences, their frustrations, and things they still would like to find out more about. And it's that type of thing. Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, how do people, so if someone wants to get hold of you, is there a website, or do I get hold of you on social media? How do I get?
Give you two contacts.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect. I'll give you two contacts. People could either get hold of Gillian Radford at Gillin at adtherapy.co.za. Adtherapy, Adtherapy. So it's Gillian at adtherapy.co.za, or get hold of Musidi at musidi1@me.com. Musidi1@me.com, or they can get hold of me, qingqile@gmail.com, qingqile@gmail.com.
Doug, you're gonna try and pronounce that again. Thank you for letting us off the hook there, because that was the one note I was working my way up to. But if it's okay with you, we're gonna stick with wing wing. I would hate to be culturally insensitive or.
But I think, you know, Gordon, on a serious note, I think, you know, that's part of South Africa. You know, is facing up to the embarrassments and the things that we can't say, and we, you know, and I think we've all gone through it through our lives as South Africans, in not just in marketing and media, but in business, you know. And the interesting and I guess for me a sad part is that a lot of companies are talking about diversity training like it's a new concept. You know, I go back to when my career first started 31 years ago in Firestone, Port Elizabeth. Now, you know, if you look at the Eastern Cape, I'm talking the old South Africa, the pre-Mandela days. You know, it was a hotbed of strikes. A lot of American influence talking about disinvestment. I worked for Firestone, the American company. The big employer down there was General Motors, American company, Goodyear, and so on and so on. And those years, I'm talking 31 years ago, we had sessions. It was still called stereotype reduction workshops those days. Today, now you must understand that we're not talking about white collar guys with a paper cut. We're talking about factory workers for the very first time 31 years ago. You're putting black and colored people ahead of white guys in the hierarchy, management. Now, you must understand, now you've got white people not used to it. You know, we had these sessions now, I guess, and I go back, I mean, it was run by a psychologist, because the thing got completely sideways day one. Because, you know, you're talking about a physical fight here. But yeah. people are, now yes, you've got, yes. the first obvious difference you see is color. You see a black guy and a white guy. Then you see a woman and a man. Yeah. That's obvious. And then you see a guy who's got a shirt and a tie, and you guess yes. he's probably a manager, and you've got a guy who's in a work overall, and you guess he's, yes. he's a guy who is a production guy on the factory floor. Yes. And what the professor did, Professor Louis Kampfer, I remember it like it was yesterday, 30 years ago, he yes. scratched that scar of differences, and he brought out, but it's a dangerous thing, eh? Because I've read a lot of work on it, and it's very mixed thinking in terms of how much of the differences do you highlight before you start patching it together. And he started putting up old school flip charts, you know what I mean? The differences that people can see but didn't want to verbalize. No one wants to go first. Eventually, once that dam wall breaks, I mean, guys they wanted to physically stuff each other up. Then he started saying, but hold on, whoa, the whole idea of this exercise is to look for the non-obvious similarities. So he started looking at things like sexual orientation. Yes. Now, those days, it's taboo, eh? So that didn't come out that obvious. People would talk freely about their religious beliefs. So suddenly you'd find a black factory worker sharing a Catholic faith, as an example, with another lady. You know what I mean? Suddenly he started talking about kids. How many children? Two and two.
Yes.
And then he started getting into the really... And now I'm talking about emotions come flowing. Now people are in tears at this stage through kids with special needs. You know, so suddenly he started saying, but hold on, the foreman on the floor has got a kid with special needs, as does the Jewish lady in accounting. I'm saying is, at the end of the day, you know, I still get goosebumps now talking about the power of it. But if it's done incorrectly, it could get dysfunctional. And so what I'm saying is back to those days. Yeah. So Firestone, and I take my hat off for them, were almost pioneers in that sense. And that's why, and I don't want to just talk about my experiences, but I think, you know, for our listeners out there, if your company's not doing something, then shame on them. You guys are in the wrong movie. You know, get a hold of people, talk, be part of it. I know Jillian, get a hold of Jillian, be part of the conversation and start the process of putting on the Band-Aid. So, thanks.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's a great note, a positive note on which to end, that we can't just leave this kind of thing to circumstance and the opportunity that maybe we'll have a drink together and find each other. There has to be a more structured approach. And so well done to you and the team for taking this on. And we're really keen to chat with you in a couple of weeks down the line to see how it's moving and the kind of results that you're experiencing. So good luck to you and Jillian and the team. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
and to our listeners. If you have
Thanks
any questions,
chat, guys.
We'll post it out. You'll see the links. We'll promote it on LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook. Have a look. Please join in. And I think if you have any questions and you're battling to get hold of Wingman, just push them through us and we will direct the queries. But I think this would be a narrative and almost a workshop we could think about in the future.
You can also find me on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn presence, that was where I found you as well. So Wingman, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it. And to our listeners
out there,
please enjoy it and please engage with the diversity program.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views and certainly will respond. And hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.